Sigmund Freud had a copy in his office. So did Vladimir Lenin. Reproductions by the thousands were in European homes. Pieces of music like this one by Rachmaninoff were inspired by the haunting image of Isle of the Dead. Some images just take over the culture. It's hard to know how it happens. They just click. That was the case with this painting by the Swiss-German artist Arnold Böcklin, sometimes called Böcklin in the U.S. He was an important romantic painter of the 19th century. And this painting, Isle of the Dead, was his moonlight sonata, in a way, his signature runaway hit. Böcklin had painted the first of many versions in 1880.
It was just this rocky island with cypresses and a lonely boat with a rower. And a young woman visited him in his studio in Florence, and she wanted to ask from him a picture to dream by.
Sabine Riewoldt, curator at the Metropolitan Museum, stands in front of the painting with me at the European Painting Gallery at the Met as it casts its spell. She says this young woman in Böcklin's studio had been widowed, and the painter was sympathetic to the woman's plight and her need to dream. So he added the figure of a woman shrouded in white with a white sarcophagus in front of it.
And that apparently is she as a widow, bringing her husband in that coffin to this island. So it became from just a romantic symbolist landscape, all of a sudden the Isle of the Dead.
The symbolists were a group of artists, writers, and poets in the late 19th century. They were determined to depart from the gritty, earthy stuff of everyday life, as depicted by the realists. So they looked for other kinds of subjects and connections.
There is something else. What about the dreams that come up at night? What are they telling us, you know? What is this other part of life that isn't so visible and tangible? Or visible even in another sense, in an interior sense.
Diane Fremont is a Jungian analyst and author of the essay The Visible and Invisible in Art. This particular painting, she says, was a symbolist icon.
And in fact came up in Freud's dreams, came up in the dreams of other patients who've been recorded by Jung, that it was so prevalent, it was just in there. And they would say, oh, and that image, this image of this young woman reminds me of the figure in Böcklin's painting, this image of death. And so it was so pervasive.
It was in 1907 in Paris that Sergei Rachmaninoff got a glimpse of a black-and-white reproduction of the image. Already preoccupied with death, the composer was moved by it. 2 years later, his symphonic poem, Isle of the Dead, caught the spirit of the painting. And some have said Rachmaninoff added to it a sense of the struggle of the soul destined for the island in a tangled section of the music. So much in demand was this painting, more European cities wanted to have not just reproductions, but originals.
Poor Böcklin had to paint three more versions because it became such a huge success. And one of them even was bought by Hitler. And he first had it in his private collection, then it ended up in the Chancellery in Berlin in 1940.
So that means Hitler, Freud, Lenin, Rachmaninoff, the playwright August Strindberg, the composer Max Reger, all found meaning in this image.
Caricaturists copied it. Postcards were made of it. Young women who furnished their flats were told to put hideous color reproductions of it on their bedroom and sitting rooms.
This is the kind of picture that is so open to interpretation that it allows the mind to start machinating.
Author and design historian Stephen Heller.
To come up with all sorts of rationales or stories. It allows the mind to fill in the blanks. Hitler would manipulate one way, Freud would manipulate another.
Master of the bare bones budget horror genre, Val Lewton, might go another way with it.
You think I'm a cold man, cold and brutal.
As he did in 1945 with his film Isle of the Dead, suggested by the painting.
Someone has broken into the coffin. It's empty.
Maybe. Boris Karloff shares a house with a stranger on a haunted island.
I came here to visit the last resting place of my wife. I found the coffins broken, empty, all of them.
I'm and still tries sorry. To be polite.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
Canadian filmmaker Norman McLaren's 1946 Little Fantasy on a 19th Century Painting was in fact an animation of this mysterious painting. The image of the island briefly comes to life and fades again. Birds fly, spooky shapes drip and ooze to original music by Louis Applebaum. The surrealists loved the painting, of course. Salvador Dali made his own version of it in 1932. But you didn't have to recreate it, or even be inspired by it, or write a symphonic poem or play about it. You just had to have it on your wall.
People love stock images because they are multiples. They create a community. I mean, we talk now about social media and all of this stuff where people get together in this great big digital commons. But having the same image on your wall meant you were part of some sort of society, some sort of group. You were one with other people. The idea of belonging, it's quite different from being an elitist where, you know, you have the one Picasso on your wall that's worth millions of dollars. You're in sync with all these other people that you may or may not know.
This whole picture has a theater set atmosphere about it, which is, I think, why it struck a chord with people.
It's this almost isolated vision of, you know, the way one is drawn into the painting, of being drawn into the womb, into the darkness, into the unknown and the unconscious. And I think that had to do with a really new awareness of the fact that there is an unconscious. There are things we don't know about.
A great painting? Maybe not. And not exactly a blank canvas either, but blank enough to project your own meanings into the resonant rectangle that is Isle of the Dead. Go ahead, take a look. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fischko.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.